is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 110. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, Nolan Arenado and Bryce Harper got a bunch of money. Will Francisco Lindor get his next? The Twins are totally going to win the AL Central. Shane Bieber looks like a breakout candidate. And we learned some interesting things from scouting reports from the Reds from several years ago, thanks to The Ringer. Joining me for all that and more is none other than Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm good. Somehow I've ended up looking at the statistics of the 1970 St. Louis Cardinals.
You know, as we all do. That's where we all end up eventually.
Joe Torre, in addition to being not pretty as a younger man, he got better as he got older. Like a fine wine. Is he into wine? Anyway, he was really good for a little while there.
As a player? Joe Torre?
Yeah, he won an MVP at one point.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, he was better than Bob Gibson that year.
Who's going to be the player like around us, who they're going to be like a manager in several years? Like that guy was an MVP. I can't believe it.
That's a very – well, because that's the thing. Back then, like, it was you just kind of became a manager because you didn't make any money as a player, you know? That's the real thing is you become a manager now because you didn't make, a quote-unquote, lots of money as a player. Like, you know, your Craig's Council of the Worlds, your – whoever the hell the manager of the Diamondbacks is, a man whose name I will never remember, Torre Lavulo. Yeah. Did he play baseball? Surely he played baseball. Major League player stats. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, 8 years in. Yeah. But I don't think there's anyone out there who's like a great player playing right now. No, that would be like a, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, most of them go into broadcasting now more than just being a head coach, I think. Right. Like, it's all catchers now. And Mike Trout sort of ruined that. Like, nobody can win one MVP anymore because you need to be better than Mike Trout to win it. So,
right, exactly. And well, that's the thing. You win one MVP and he comes in second. So that's game, set, match. But I don't know. Who's the best player out there now who will be a manager? And if people say that about people like Miguel Cabrera or Joey Votto would be a good hitting coach. But they're not going to do that. They've made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. They have no reason to do that.
Would you hire Molina if he just really loves baseball? He seems like the most I love baseball sort of guy there is.
I would say yes. That is probably the pinnacle of, a player that we can think of as playing right now who may become like a manager at some point. Yeah, that sounds like the peak.
Yeah.
So there which isn't to, you know, discredit Yadier Molina. He's a great player and everything, but. See, now you've got me looking at a list of current, like, active WAR leaders. Curtis Granderson, maybe?
But like you said, they all do other things now because they made so much money that
right.
I don't think I want to go through the rigors of being a head coach afterwards. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe we just don't know yet who's going to be that guy.
David Ortiz, he's going to make a ton of money on TV.
Oh, yeah. He's got too much personality to be a... That's the other thing, too. They all have so much personality now. Like, you go on TV or do your own thing after.
Okay, so we do the podcast without any personality. So Mark Teixeira, there we go.
I don't know. He's on, he does the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney a lot now.
Is he any good?
No, but I mean, he's there. He's just kind of the bland representing the players guy.
You know who's a good one? I think Alex Gordon could end up as like a manager of some kind somewhere. And, you know, he's right around there with your Yadier Molina in terms of career wins above replacement output. That kind of a player, you know, very good player and a world champion. Not quite a MVP type, but. Underrated for a while, had a couple great seasons that, you know, never, I guess, grazed the sense of the broader kind of baseball knowledge world, I suppose. Yeah, someone
and
like
our
that.
Grandkids will wonder who the hell that is several years down the road when he's the manager of the Twins or whatever.
Brandon so Phillips, that's another player I could think of.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Johnny Peralta, you know? Career 31 wins above replacement. Had a couple pretty good years there, but never really quite a star. Matt Holliday.
I think we're dipping down. Not to, no offense to those guys, but we're dipping lower and lower now.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we're out of like the Yadier Molina range.
And I guess what I'm looking at guys who are, like, at this point, it looks like guys who are between, just in terms of this chart, I pulled, you know, guys, this is most wins above replacement since from 2005 to now. So I'm getting guys like, Brett Gardner, Russell Martin, you know, guys like that in the 30 to 40 range, I suppose. That makes sense.
Maybe, what about Yan Gomes? About that one?
Well, he hasn't been worth that much, so he didn't come on my chart. Thank you very much.
I'm just saying, that's like a likable guy. You could be
yes,
a manager.
But... That would be a good choice right there. Yeah, you know, David DeJesus and his 21 wins above replacement.
So, Merritt, last week. Of course, it happened directly after we had our last podcast,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Yeah. Nolan Arenado was literally the day of. I think it was Tuesday, like right after we did our podcast. He signed a big extension with the Rockies for 8 years, $260 million.
Yes,
also $1 billion.
Well, with the elevation, you know, it scales up.
Does it? The money floats up there?
But no, actually, it's worth less there because it's a high cost of living in Denver. But anyway.
And then Bryce Harper, of course, had his $13 million, $330 million deal, which is extremely front-loaded and looks a lot like he was just doing anything he could to get that record deal, which good for him. Do it if you want. But that's what we got now. Two big contracts. And then, of course, for Indians fans, the looming question now is that Francisco Lindor is going to get something right around there. Probably Nolan Arenado is probably the closer comp just because he would have been the same. I think he's 1 year younger than Lindor is going to be when he hits free agency. But Lindor is probably such a better player overall. He's already got as much WAR just about. He has 22.8 in 574 games. Arenado has 25.3 in 876 games. So I don't know. You can really look at Nolan Arenado's massive deal and say that maybe Francisco Lindor is going to get something like this. And I mean, if the Rockies can do it, the Indians probably can do it. They're really similar in terms of the evaluations from Forbes last year. They're very similar teams in their market size. They're just pretty much everything. These two teams are like the AL and NL equivalent of each other. So I think if the Rockies can do it, the Indians surely can, because pretty much any team can afford a bunch of money at this point, we know. So do you think we're going to see this? Are the Indians going to give Lindor this huge contract, hopefully sometime before he leaves? Or is he serious about not focusing on an extension? He's just going to play it out and, good Lord, be a free agent and be way overpriced for the Indians.
Well, Arenado got, how much did it end up being? He signed through
260.
So he got 260, 7 years starting this year, I guess. Yeah.
Well,
he's going to be a free agent at the end of this year. So he's making 26 this year and then 35 the rest of the way, basically.
Yep, and he has an opt-out after 3 years.
Opt-out after 3 years.
So it's basically, if the Rockies aren't competing, I would assume he's going to say, I'm out and I'm going to do free agency. But
yeah,
he seems to love the Rockies, and if they're going to win, then he wants to stay there and win.
You know, I don't know. My gut kind of says no, quite honestly, just because I don't think the Indians are going to spend the money. That's like four times the largest deal that they've ever had signed. Which is,
yeah, it is. It literally is.
So, that's daunting. And it would have to be a deal that would be signed in the next, 2 years? And I was thinking about this the other day, too. And, like, it's something we don't really think about. But jealousy is a thing that exists among people. And if Lindor goes out there and he gets a deal for, you figure he signed, this is a $260 million deal or whatever that Arenado got. It would be, $275 probably for Lindor if they were able to sign him, I guess, next year maybe would be a year that would make sense, right? Because that would be 1 year before he'd be a free agent. There'd be one year left on his contract.
There'd be two if he does next year, because he's a free agent after 2021. After,
okay, yeah. So, well, at that point, we're talking about, $290. I mean, and the jealousy I'm talking about is between him and, obviously, Jose Ramirez, who's only making, $8 million.
And poor guy.
I mean, you don't feel bad for millionaires, but at the same time, he's getting screwed by a 100 millionaire. And then you see his friend and compatriot who he came up with and all this stuff and is better than in a lot of measures, making way more than him. So to answer your question directly, I don't think so. I mean, maybe the Indians really need to push to sign him now, offer him $200 million. I just don't think they're going to do that. They're too cost centric. And I know you said that the market size and all this stuff is very similar. The Rockies draw really, really well. And they do also have kind of a bonus of kind of a geographical area. In my head, I'm thinking this where they kind of have a larger shot at a larger fan base. And the Indians are kind of hemmed in by the Tigers to the west, the Reds once they get good again, the Pirates are there too. But there's just lots of things going on there in addition to a lot of other things drawing attention, whereas the Rockies, the next closest team to them, I guess, is the Diamondbacks. And then if you go the other way, the Royals. So they have an opportunity to take control of a very large area. And also, they draw very, very well, if only because it's a nice, inexpensive place to go and spend a nice summer night in Denver. I know you could say that about Cleveland, Ohio, too, and Progressive Field, but I just don't think it's fair to compare Denver, Colorado to Cleveland, Ohio in at any point in time, because it's, well, I just don't want.
Wow, Merritt. So just in, Merritt Rolfing hates Cleveland, Ohio. Denver,
man, it's really nice. that whole area is.
I haven't, but I know what you're talking about. It sounds really nice.
And again, there's more money there and stuff like that too. So they definitely have an opportunity to spend more money. And I think that's the crux of the whole thing. Quite honestly, the Indians, yes, they can go and blow the Dolan's entire fortune, which I'm all for, but they're not going to do that. And they just have such restrictions that unless they can sign Lindor to, you know, a tear up the contract and buy out his free agency years at $20 million a year and get him for $225 million for the next 8 years or whatever it is, including this year and next. And the next one. They have 2 more years with him? Yeah. So this year, so they have 3 more years. This is his first arbitration year. So if they could tear all that up, buy it up for $20 million a year and then give him 30 for another 5 or something like that, what does that add up to? That's $210 million. That's a deal like...
I still don't even think that takes that.
That's cool. If they could pull that off. You know, he's worth it. He's worth it 10 times out of 10. And yeah. You'd have him through his age, 1, 2, 3, up to 30. And then you give a, fuck it, give him a, you know, I mean, give him an opt out after year 4. So you at least get 1 free agent year or something like that. You know what I mean? So I don't know. That's a good contract, I think. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I don't know if he takes that at this point. I think he waits to get like the massive one
because he's getting 10 this year. He's going to get $17 million next year or whatever, and then he's going to get 24 or whatever, and then the Indians need to trade him. I mean, it's just like what Bauer has said about how this is his last year in an Indians uniform. It doesn't make any finance. I mean, if the Indians are going to act as financially restricted as they are, as they did all this year, and just try and, you know, piece it together or whatever, or just make the playoffs and say screw it, whatever, I don't know, however they're rationalizing it, it doesn't make any sense for them to hold on to Lindor after next year. Yeah. Because the money's going to be too high, the amount that they can get back for him would be astronomical, even for just a 1 year rental. So I don't know. I mean, if they can't do it in the next year or two, they already, I think, missed the boat personally when he didn't take that one deal.
Man, can you imagine if they were just a couple million off there? Even if it was like 20 million away. Like if he would have taken it for 7 years, 120 million, and they said no.
He was at 140. If he said
that look real
7 years, $150 million. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
No. Fire everybody. Like, damn. That's a bad look. Jesus. After the 2017. What? That was after 2017, right? That was after 2016, too. So he hadn't even.
That was after 2016.
Hit the gas really yet. Jesus Christ.
No, that was before his like 8-WAR season. That's just when he only went to the World Series. That was what that was. And I think he's playing it really well from a PR perspective too. Like taking the $10 million in his first year and saying, "Look how much money that is." Of course, I'll take it. Like he's doing a really good job of not making himself look greedy. Oh, but yeah, you know, he knows how
again,
much
these guys
really
have
worth,
agents. So. They're not stupid. Like they know. Ramirez was. I think we've talked about this before. Like Lindor is a top prospect, first round pick, all this stuff. He was number one, everything. Everyone talked about him constantly in the run up to his debut. That only serves to help him and, you know, build A, his ego, and B, his market. Someone like Ramirez had none of that. He is a man who built himself. He saw his opportunity to get, you know, again, life changing money, and he took it, and he's better off for it. And the Indians are better off for it too, obviously. You know, I mean, if he had waited a year, Jesus Christ, the Indians really hit it right there. That one is mind blowing. They have him until he's 30 years old for a combined $20 million or something like that. No, more than that. But, you know, Jesus Christ.
And Bryce Harper also just sold like a shitload of, you know, of jerseys. I think it's the most ever for any sport, any athlete in any sport.
Yeah, I saw that headline. I'm like, what is that? I didn't read the article. I was like, what the hell does that even mean? Like,
he just sold that many jerseys. And they sold a bunch of tickets. It's ridiculous. I wonder, like, so teams don't get that when they sign an extension, really. I can't imagine any more Arenado jerseys, or I'm sure more, but not that kind of inflection of Arenado jerseys went out. They've already just expected him to be there. So that's kind of an interesting difference for a team between choosing to extend a guy or bring in a big name free agent. I guess that's just the benefit you pay for paying quite a bit more for a free agent besides extending a guy when he's still on your team.
It really does open up a window too for hipsters in Philadelphia, because they can get something who isn't Bryce Harper. They could get a player like, I don't know. Well, they could just start wearing their old Carlos Santana baby blue one.
I've always loved Scott Kingery.
Yeah, you know, your sick Odubel Herrera jersey, or, you know, I mean, obviously you can go with Rhys Hoskins if you want, but I don't know. I mean, me, I'd go with one of those cool pitchers that I like. Like, I mean, Velasquez is an obvious one, but who's that one pitcher with a nice curveball that I really like?
Aaron Nola?
No, the other one. He didn't pitch very much last year because he was injured. Oh, Jared Eichhoff. That's who it was. I was a big fan of his when he was younger, when he was like a rookie. He had a big time rookie season and a very nice second season. So, and he fell off the table. I think he got Tommy John surgery. Oh no, I'm sorry. He has carpal tunnel syndrome and experienced recurring symptoms. So
you're just going to walk down Philadelphia wearing your Eichhoff jersey and snubbing your nose at Bryce Harper fans?
Oh, Harper, I got on the bandwagon, buddy. I was here when Eichhoff was twirling curveballs up there. That was a year ago. Yeah, whatever.
We didn't need no Harper. We were going to win the World Series anyway.
I guess you could always just wear a Jim Thome jersey.
I was looking at that. Like, the Phillies fans are saying this compares to the Jim Thome. It's really weird seeing people be excited about Jim Thome signing somewhere else, because I'm so used to Indians fans being so upset at Thome signing elsewhere. So
I know. Well, he was, you know, he's a good player and people like him. Remember when he got a statue and then signed somewhere else? That was great.
But everybody always loves that guy.
I'll never forget that.
And then he's got a nice statue.
I know. Well, it's because he's a big happy boy, you know, and that was a Hall of Famer. So now the Hall of Fame is happy he signs them. There you go.
So, Marin, I have some bad news for you. I hate to break it to you, but
I don't listen to bad news. So,
but the nope. Twins, they're going to win the AL Central in 2019. They're the breakout team. That's what Joe Sheehan said. That's what John Morosi has said. So, I mean, it's going to happen. I don't know if you saw this, but so Baseball America, Joe Sheehan wrote it for that, and then John Morosi, I guess, went on MLB Network with mostly the same thing. I didn't listen to it. I didn't get a chance to, but I'm assuming it's mostly the same talking points. But they're both talking about the combination of the upside of Byron Buxton, Miguel Sano, maybe Jorge Polanco. But anyway, they have a lot of upside going on there. I've always been a big Byron Buxton fan. If he would stop getting injured and could just do it over a whole season, even though it's on the Twins, I've always loved speedy center fielders, and he's the epitome of it. But combine that with the fact that they have Nelson Cruz now, and they're 2 years removed from a wild card game. They seem like a team who could win. We thought last year they'd be a lot better, and I actually wrote earlier in the offseason that I want the Twins to be better, just to quote Terry Francona, to put a rocket in the Indians' ass, like Ernie Clement when he comes in spring training. But it just seemed like they could do with somebody in the AL Central giving them some challenges, and it would make the regular season way more watchable for us just in general to not be blowing away the competition. But I still don't know if it's quite true. Max Kepler, maybe he'll be okay. But everybody seems to skim over just how bad the rotation is going to be outside of Jose Barrios.
I know. I was just going to say, Kyle Gibson is fine, I guess. I don't know about being a number two. I didn't realize they had Michael Pineda, of all people. Like, whoa, I forgot about
their number four
about
pitcher,
him.
In case you want to remember that the Indians is Mike Clevenger.
Like, that's the thing. They have him. They have Jake Odorizzi, who had some good years down in Tampa Bay. There's nothing wrong there. It's just he hasn't been good in 2 years. Also, he wasn't very good for the Twins in 2018, with 164 innings. He was fine. 134 whip, 449 ERA. But again, their rotation just isn't there. And then you look at the fact that, to be quite honest with you, I need to confirm this. But okay, so he bats right. So do you remember when the Indians really started on their ascent, and then they just started just beating the hell out of the Tigers constantly and consistently? And a large part of that was because it was just tons and tons and tons of right-on-right matchups, right? Like, it's never as big of a problem for a righty, it seems like, to hit a righty as it is for a lefty to hit a lefty pitcher. But it still is definitely, you know, the same side splits is always usually a worse thing. And it just looks to me, lineup-wise, like the Twins are just a crappier version of that team, that Tigers team. They're just a ton of, you know, right-handed. Their biggest supposed bats are all right-handed. And the Indians still have a great right-handed rotation. Like,
it might be mostly the same right-handed rotation.
Yeah, exactly. The only things that are different is Bauer is now no longer number four. He may be the best pitcher in the rotation. Carrasco is I mean, Clevinger is better. Bieber is not Josh Tomlin. And then they still have a guy who somehow is the odds-on favorite to win the Cy Young in the AL this year, which I thought was crazy that Corey Kluber has the best odds in Vegas to win the Cy Young this year. But that's what they're going to have to face. So the Indians aren't going to score a ton of runs this year, especially early on. So that's definitely going to help narrow the gap a little bit. But yeah, no, that rotation is trash. And then the bullpen is not bad yet, but and I don't want to throw the Twins and just say they're going to be garbage. They're going to be a good team. They're well run. They made a lot of changes that I think are going to pay dividends in the long run. And they're definitely making changes to get into the current age of, you know, baseball judgment, things like that. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if they won the AL Central at all. If Buxton figures it out, if Sano figures it out, if Cruz is still good, even at age, what is he, like 39 now at this point?
Yeah, and he's still projected to be like, I think it's 120-something WRC plus. He's still going to be really good, which is crazy.
Oh, yeah, no, I guess he is crazy. Every time I watch him play, I'm like, why couldn't Edwin Encarnacion be doing this? Like, that's one of the reasons they had to get rid of Edwin, because he just wasn't Edwin anymore. He just was a slightly above average bat who couldn't do literally anything else. So that's, yeah. I mean, Rosario's going to hit a billion home runs against the Indians, so that's fun. But aside from that, they have a lot of – the upside thing is fun, and the hope thing is fun. It does need to be realized, though.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know. We'll see how real, like, Willian's Estudio is, and whether Cruz is old and Buxton figures it out. And the rotation, really, that after the top two, even, it falls into a pit that there is no coming back from. So,
we'll see. And to be fair to Joe Sheehan and I'm sure John Morosi, that they're looking for sleeper teams. They're not, like, saying the –
oh, definitely.
The Twins are going to be better than the Indians. But it reminds me a lot of, we talked about them last week, the 2015 Indians, where it's all based on upside and one or two potentially super good players who might be there. So, Merritt, one of the Indians pitchers in the rotation who will hopefully...
Josh Tomlin?
Nope, he's on the Brewers now.
This will be shutting down. Last year that Josh Tomlin was a league average pitcher, as a matter of fact, was 2015. Very interesting. Yep, actually, that was the last year, the only year he was a league average pitcher. No, he did it twice. Never mind. Anyway, moving on.
You're on a roll, Merritt.
Hey, you got to look around for things, Matt. Use your eyes to see, as they say.
But yeah, it was. Yeah, he got basically got his 2-year contract off of like 1.5 years, but it seemed like a good deal at the time, because remember, he's a decent number five pitcher for a while. But
no, exactly, he was fine. I mean, you didn't really care as long as the rest of them were borderline Cy Young candidates. It's just it really went sideways towards the end there. So
yeah, but the guy who replaced him last year, Shane Bieber, really good at pitching. Turns out he can throw the ball a lot. He can throw a lot of strikes. We know that from last year. Baseball Prospectus called him one of their potential breakout pitchers, citing his high BABIP last year for as a result of his ERA, which is over 4. And he's got a great mix of pitches. But as you talked about in your post earlier, or last week, I think it was, he uses his fastball a lot when he gets in the favorable counts and sort of lets batters back in. So that's one thing he's probably going to fix this year. And then at that point, I mean, he's another really good pitcher, mid-rotation guy that's actually the Indians' number 5 pitcher for their potential breakout for Shane Bieber.
He has 2 fastballs technically. It's just if you'll read that article I wrote, baseball
I didn't Vermont, read it.
Well, you know, if the theoretical listener were to read that, the Baseball Savant compiles all fastballs when they show that thing, because I think he has a sinker as well, and they just didn't pick up on it. One of the, I don't know, he's got, it's a 2-seamer maybe, I don't know, I don't remember offhand. But no, I know his real problem is he just throws too many fastballs at all. When you don't have an electric one, and he doesn't, he just locates it well. That's just not good enough. So he just needs to throw. I don't know. I talked about it, change up more. He only threw it 4% of the time last year's curveball.
He showed a disgusting change up today. I don't know if you saw that, but
I don't know which one he's working. He's going really against Hosmer
against the Padres. I think it was Hosmer specifically. Yeah.
Yeah, no, his second at bat against Hosmer, he struck him out on 3 pitches, and I think he went changeup, quite honestly. Because he had one that kind of ran away from him, one that kind of took it might have been a curveball. He might have gone changeup fastball, or changeup, curveball, changeup, because he had one that kind of ran away from him, one that kind of just had a nice little bite, and another one that ran away again. He just made Hosmer look the fool. And that's what just to be quite honest, that's what he needs to do, is just learn a better changeup. And
Yeah, because at some point you just become Josh Tomlin. If you start losing anything, you're just always in the zone. Then you're going to become the guy who gives up a million home runs with everything in the zone.
Right, exactly. You're a pitcher from the 1980s, and that's just, that just doesn't play anymore. So by throwing less, like, you can make a living off tunneling and things like that, and he definitely does, just because he does have all that stuff. And I mentioned this in my piece last week, or at least I was trying to get at this point, that even though he doesn't have the wipeout slider, he does have the, it moves enough, and it's just the right velocity where it can catch a guy off, you know, front on his front foot, and he can swing and miss. And that's, I think, why he had such a high swing strike rate on the slider. He tunnels it well with his fastball. And by having a changeup, it would work, I think, even better. And if anything, make the slider work better and make it more valuable against left-handed hitters, too. So,
now, I know you've looked a lot at changeups for Bieber, for Carrasco, for Bauer. I mean, is this a thing you think is a thing going on, that the pitchers are picking up changeups specifically because of how hitters are approaching?
I mean, it's something I've thought about for a long time. The changeup is, you need a third pitch. And if you already have a breaking ball, and my thought process is you need an off speed pitch. And the other value of the changeup is it's good against opposite handed hitters. So if you already have a breaking pitch and a fastball, the breaking pitch is almost always going to break away from the same sided hitter as you are. And like the curveball, whether it breaks down, it's still going to have a bit of a run away too. The changeup just works against the opposite guys, because generally a changeup, it's more so a circle change, but you know, a typical change will have a bit of a arm side fade to it, so it'll give you a little bit of a chance to miss some bats that way too. It's about creating deception, I guess, is what I always think about. And I mean, even in this world, in the era of power and, you know, more power and more power, you still need to be able to deceive. It's not just 100-mile-an-hour fastballs that makes Aroldis Chapman so great. That wipeout slider also helps. And catching guys unawares. I remember last year I wrote that piece about, maybe a year and a half ago now, something like that. I don't know, a while back I wrote a piece about Andrew Miller and about how his pitching splits on his slider and his fastball were like 50-50. And it was basically just, you're going up there, just straight up game theory the entire time. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't. If he throws this now, then what's he going to throw next? Well, obviously he's going to throw the fastball next. But what if he's, so it creates a sense of indecision. And that, I think, is for someone who doesn't have a killer fastball like Bieber, he needs to be able to create the indecision more. And by having a third pitch and that being a changeup, I think it tunnels better than a big looping curveball, just because it's moving at a similar velocity, it seems like, just because of the arm speed, even if it's coming in at 5 to 10 miles an hour slower. That's all I think about. I don't know. The changeup was in vogue like 4 years ago, and obviously the Rays still really focus on it a lot. If you're a Rays pitcher, you still need to have a good changeup. And
yeah, it feels like it's coming back in general. Just the Indians are using it a lot more too, because Bauer is trying to learn it. So,
well, and he just wants to have the peak pitch of every single thing too. So I think he's a bit of an outlier. But it's just, I mean, honestly, we've seen Kluber get by without a changeup for the most part. He doesn't really throw any. He throws he's got a four seam, a sinker, a cutter, and his slurve.
So over at the Ringer, somebody was nice enough to dump off a bunch of scouting reports for the Reds, which, before we even get into all this, like, who the hell did that?
I know. The article just starts, we got these.
We got several years of hundreds of scouting reports from like, just some former office, front office.
Legally? Did they know about this? Did he just have it lying around? He's like, oh, I forgot about these. Oh, I have a thumb drive chock full of these.
Well, for anybody who doesn't know, the Ringer got, they're going to do a three-part series of just analyzing just hundreds of, I think it was either hundreds or in the hundreds. It was dozens. We can go with dozens of scouting reports from the late 90s and the early 2000s. There was a lot of really good stuff. And even just this first part, a couple of things that stuck out to me were on, you know, the 2080 scale they use. Everything sort of just gets lumped in the middle because everybody's afraid to.
Yeah, it's barf. I hate it.
Right. To call somebody too good or too bad, which, by the way, is always my problem with like movie and video game reviews. It's always, if it's below an 8, it's considered bad. So what's the point of having everything down there? So it's sort of the same thing with the 2080 scale, as it turns out, which I don't think is a surprise to many people. The most important thing ended up usually being like the number of reports for a player, because it showed that a team was really interested in that player, and they oftentimes ended up being good. Because the team was so focused, it didn't matter what the report said, just the fact that they were following that guy so much. Because the reports were oftentimes just so bad. The only thing that was really accurate was speed. They only used the 2080 scale because they used a stopwatch. It was really easy to tell if this guy is fast. And then, of course, my favorite thing from the whole article is about Joey Votto. That's somebody's scouting report on him. It was, quote, to date, he has been way out of his element, not ready for pro ball. Later on, he said he has a long, slow uppercut swing, different attitude, probably the result of Canadian background. And he concluded, not a major league prospect, expressed love for the game in pre-draft conversation. He'll need it. That's Joey Votto, by the way, one of the best patient hitters in all of baseball.
Listen, you can't trust Canadians. That's what you need to learn about this first. Jason Bay, can't trust him. Who are some other Canadian players?
Joey Votto. Wait, no, we did that one.
I already said that one. There's some pitcher who's good, who's a Canadian guy.
James Paxton.
James Paxton, that's the one. Big Maple, yeah.
But still, like we were saying before the show, like I guess it makes sense because walks don't show up very well in a scouting report. That also explains why for so long baseball missed out on on-base percentage kind of stuff.
Oh, wait, Matt, what about this? In September of 93, one Red Scout called Charlie Hayes has a lot of ability but poor makeup, refuses to play hard or work hard. Yet in August 1998, a third scout who saw Hayes said, 6 foot, 230, bundle of joy, great attitude and makeup, loves to play the game. I love scouts, and they're my favorite, and I want that job because you can literally do anything, it seems like. But as long as you hit on a player every, like, I'll even say 2 years. Not even that. If you hit like on a generational player, you're good for 20 years. If you're the guy who found Albert Pujols or something like that, or like, I don't know who the scout is who found Jose. Yeah, whoever that is, like, he's good. He is fine now. He's just living large. He's like, I don't know. He's no Jose Ramirez, he says as he looks at, I don't know, for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
And then Keith Law was saying like the exact opposite is the reason they never use the upper end of the scale. Because if you do that and the guy doesn't pan out, then you look like an idiot. So there's no reason to go out on a limb. So everybody just sticks around in the 55-65 range so that nobody gets fired or called out on a bad prediction.
Which is crazy because like I think that's as much a kind of a statement on not just on the scouts' lack of willingness to go out on a limb as it is the front office's lack of willingness to see any nuance in that. You know, like if I say a guy has 80 power, that doesn't mean I think he's going to hit 87 home runs a day. He just hit the ball really hard when I saw him. Like,
yeah.
The scouts don't go and watch a player for, you know, they don't follow one player all season. They travel all over the place. And they might hang around for, you know, like I remember when I was living in Lexington, Kentucky, and I'd go to a lot of Legends games, and there'd always be scouts there. And I never saw the same ones all the time. But I saw a lot of the same faces a lot of different times. So they stay in similar routes and stuff, but like they'll go then they'll be there for like a series or something like that. And like that's what you draw your entire judgment off of, which is silly because I remember I think it was last year and there was someone who was writing an article. I can't remember what it was. I want to say it was at Fangraphs. But like basically what it was saying was like if you looked at Mike Trout's numbers from the beginning of 2018, the first 10 games of the season, let me tell you what he hit, Matt, as soon as I get there. And
I'm
this
gonna
is
guess
and,
it's real bad.
Well, that's the thing. First 10 games, he was hitting 220, 319, 512. So if you just saw this guy, random guy, and I didn't see no name on the back of his jersey, right? He hits 3 home runs, so you give him big power. Couple of doubles, 6 walks, but he struck out 9 times. So he's swing happy. He's got a decent eye and he got a lot of power. But I mean, outside of that, like, what do you see? Now, I don't know. I'm just scouting out of a box score here. But that's the thing, too. Like, there's no judgment to be drawn from that because you're just only seeing these guys for a few games. So I don't know. I think, again, it's kind of a judgment against the lack of nuance these guys are seeing and understanding that these scouts are good at what they do, but they can't see everything this guy's doing all the time. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Just something off my head.
I mean, you see one player, and they even say like they never cross-checked their players enough. So one scout who would just sort of ignore another one, they would just never look at that guy. That's how so many players fell through the cracks because they just couldn't cover every single person, which is, it makes sense because only so many people. But I have a free idea for anybody out there. You can make like something where you put in a player's stats for the day, like Mike Trout's or whatever, and then it just dumps out like a scouting report for how that player is based on those one day. So you can get a glimpse of how weird it is to scout based on one single game of a player who plays hundreds over the course of a few years.
Hey, Matt, what do you think last year, what do you think was the latest date that Mike Trout's on base percentage wasn't above 400?
What was opening day?
The 29th of March.
March 30th.
No, actually, he hit on base percentage of 1.
God damn it.
He got it got as high as 400 on April 18th and fell back down to 382 and hit 398 on April 20th and then did not fall below 400 the rest of the year.
He is ridiculous.
420! Anyway.
He needs to not be stuck on the Angels, first of all. Just give him one playoff run and then baseball is set for a good long while. Let that guy shine in the World Series once.
I'm going to see how many times. Let's see. It got above for good on the April 17th in 2017. In 2016, it got above 400. Oh, a bit of a late one for him here, actually. He's all the way into May. What did he
garbage.
I don't think he had. Oh, no, never mind. There we go. Oh, good Lord. His on-base percentage was above 400 as of May. May 18th. Took him an extra month. Bit of a slow start for him that year, I guess.
Sorry, wasn't there a thing for a little while that he started slow and then always blew up eventually?
Yeah, here's one where it got.
But
above.
Then it was it last year where he was injured when he had the extremely good start and then it derailed everything a bit?
That was in 2017.
So. God, all these years run together.
In 2015, his on base percentage got above 400 on April 10th, the fourth game of the season, and did not fall below the rest of the year. Oh, never mind. There we go. It fell back to low. Oh no, we got bad. Oh no! Oh no! Oh.
And then just think if there was only scouting reports like you said, you know? Who knows if he would even have? I'm sure he would have made it because obviously he's hit really well. I mean, but
talent plays, especially these days with Twitter in general. And there's that Flat Ground app now. Have you seen that on Twitter?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah,
that's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know how you do that with, because that's the thing, dude. With pitching, it's so obvious. The guy throws 100 miles an hour. Yeah, we should probably give him a look.
But I mean, it's still hard to find those guys. Probably if they're
right. Well, but that's the thing.
There's some kid in Kentucky, so
like that at least gives people an opportunity. Hitting is so much harder. Like, you know, that guy's judgment of Joey Votto. Maybe it was fair. Maybe he just looked like shit for a couple games. But it's
just an angry Canadian who didn't have the right attitude.
Yeah, he's just a grumpy Canadian who couldn't get the good maple syrup wherever he was playing. So I don't know. Maybe it's just knowing. I mean, especially hitting is such a grind, and the value of Joey Votto is in the long run. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to fault the guy. He was kind of right in a way. A stupid way, but still, you know. I like the idea that if he gained patience, Vladimir Guerrero would become a good hitter, and he did not, and he became a good hitter anyway. So that was
pretty good. I think that he turned out all right. He was okay.
Yeah, you know, he turned out okay. You know, Jeff Bagwell, like this one, non-roster player, wears contact lenses, can't play third base, but it looks like he can play third or first.
And there's even, I mean, some of this stuff is all like lightheartedly weird and fun, but they also get into the point that a lot of it is like racial prejudice on the part of scouts.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, how much, you know, for the first 50 years of baseball, if you're Cuban, you're either a banjo hitting center, a banjo hitting middle infielder, or a pitcher who throws, or a lefty who throws curveballs, and that's it. That's all that comes out of Cuba. Like, if you're not that, then you're, I don't know. I don't even know how people would judge that then. You know what I mean? Like if suddenly a guy from Aroldis Chapman came out of nowhere, if that happened, I don't know. I think someone's head would explode if they saw that in 1965. Or Yoenis Cespedes. If he came out of Cuba back then, he would have, I don't know. Again, someone's head would have exploded.
He would have just probably scouted as like overly aggressive at the plate and all this stuff. That's not true just because he's just a not white athlete. So you're not allowed to be any of that.
Too flashy in the outfield. I mean, he is really flashy in the outfield. God, I miss me some Yoenis Cespedes.
But there were even comments about like having too many earrings and necklaces and like that stuff. That's the scouts getting kind of not being good at their job.
It's all bull honky from a bunch of honkies. anyway.
All right, Merritt. Every Monday. We ask on Facebook and Twitter for all your guys' questions that we're going to answer on the podcast. This week we've got a few good ones. The first one comes from Ghost in the Shell. He asks, is it weird that the Indians front office has been one step ahead this offseason? Is it weird that I think the Indians front office has been one step ahead this offseason prioritizing low-risk, high-risk reward moves, and acquiring multiple players that have a history of playing competent defense and high walk rates on base percentage. I don't think that's weird at all. I think that's what they've been doing.
Wait, did he say that they've been prioritizing low-risk, high-reward?
Yeah, that's all they have.
Low-risk, high-reward is the best possible option.
Right. He's saying it's... No, I guess you're right. I think he's saying that he doesn't feel like other teams do that. Like, other teams are just trying to get Bryce Harper.
Right.
While the Indians are focused on these guys.
I've got these all-star caliber players. It's great. I don't know what's going on here.
But I don't think it's weird at all. That's how they've built this team. That's how they're going to keep doing it, I think. It translates to Facebook commentators as dumpster diving, but that's called building your team a smart way and sustainable way when you're the Indian.
I think it's a more positive way of that article I wrote last week about how they're rebuilding while being division winners at the same time.
Yeah. So you get, my favorite part was seeing that you still get to watch the fun prospects come up while your team is also winning. It's the best.
Also, we're dominating, but at the same time, like, oh, this guy could be very, like, yeah, today I tried to watch a few of Jake Bowers' very irritating name to pluralize. I'm already sick of it, but I was trying to watch it a couple of at bats. Unfortunately, it was against the lefty and he looked terrible. But, you know, these are the things that you get said about, because Jake Bowers could be very good. Or maybe he'll be bad. Like, there's still a lot of potential oozing around the outfield. Maybe one of these guys will figure it out finally. For the life of me, I don't know why I haven't given up on Tyler Naquin yet. But, you know, but back to this guy's question. I need to read it again. What was it again?
it's an easy one, I think. He thinks, is it weird to think that the Indians have been proactive in not... And getting the kind of guys they have been for the last few years, like the Mike Napolis, Rajai Davis, the low-risk, high-reward, minor league signing kind of guys. I don't think it's new, and I don't think it's really surprising all that much.
No, I mean, when you have the core, it's just the issue now is the core isn't quite as strong as it was. When you had at least three all-star caliber hitters, as they did last year and the year before, if not four, you could plug these pieces in around the edges. It's just... Maybe it would make more sense to go a little more high risk, high reward. You know what I mean? I mean, in this case, they're doing it in a different way where I think the floor for someone like Jake Bowers or even like someone like Bradley Zimmer, like, and that's something what people talk about with Bradley Zimmer when he was just a prospect. Like, even at his worst, he's going to be at least a valuable player. Jordan Luplo, I don't know. I mean, he's shown flashes of things in AAA and then also shown flashes of being a quad A hitter. So, I don't know. It's they've given themselves a higher floor than you could honestly think that they were going to be able to pull off, considering who they let walk. So I don't know. Like, Perez is a good catcher. I don't care what anyone says. Santana's back, and I think he'll be an above average hitter. But yeah, you have guys like Bowers and Naquin and Martin. Ugh.
Yeah, I'm weirdly getting really optimistic about this team now. I don't know if it's the magic of spring being back.
Oh, without a doubt, buddy. Don't worry. It's happening.
Why am I feeling so optimistic about the team now? It's weird.
Exciting. Adam Simber's going to learn how to throw a slider, and John Edwards is going to be a real human being. It's going to be fantastic. Mm.
So at Michael Inkrot, among many questions that he asked, so thank you, Mitchell. Or Mitchell, yeah, I said Michael. It's Mitchell. One of them, my favorite one, was if you had to choose one player to drive across country with, who would it be? I thought about this way too much, not going to lie. Most of my planning for the podcast was this question. The first thing that comes to mind is like Trevor Bauer or Mike Clevenger. Talk to the really interesting guys about baseball. But think about that. I don't want to ride cross country with an intense guy like Trevor Bauer. You're going to get into some political stuff you don't want to talk about with him. And then Mike Clevenger, I think.
You'll have to leave him somewhere in Oklahoma. Get out of the car.
Either one of them are just like two intensive baseball guys. And they probably don't want to talk about baseball the whole time anyway.
Clevenger so might be, I may be fine things. With, but I just don't know if we'd get along that well.
Who?
I don't know. Clevenger.
Oh, yeah. I think it'd be like just too intense.
You think?
Just as a person, I think. Like, my answer is Adam Plutko. Because he seems kind of just like a weird guy. He's a dad now. We could talk about kids and pets and stuff, so. He's like a really normal guy to talk to, I think.
I think the obvious answer is Cody Anderson.
And the quiet. Talk about
trucks.
Trucks and sweating on the farm. You'd have to have the AC on all the time when you're riding with him. Like, Cody, it's 60 degrees in here. What are you doing?
Dude, it's November. What's going on here? Ooh, it's hot one today. Jesus Christ. Why are you wet?
It's the podcast title. Let me write that down before I forget. Anyway, why are you wet? There we go. Episode 110. Thank you. That's a good idea, too. Cody Anderson seems interesting.
I think Cody Anderson would be fun. You know, I mean, other than that, Kipnis might be neat. He seems like a fun guy. I don't know. Driving across the country sucks with anyone, so I'd almost like it to be someone who I just wouldn't talk to anyway.
I think Kipnis would have been fun for me, like, 7 years ago.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But now he's, like, too much of a kid, and I have kids now.
No, I do not. I have a cat and might get a second one, so I'm fine, man.
He'd be fun to – I'd rather watch a podcast of two people driving cross-country than actually drive cross-country with somebody.
Maybe Dan Otero, so again, I could leave him somewhere in Nebraska.
Wait, I got to look up – I'm not messing up Nick's name again. Because last week when I tried several times and failed, he was nice enough to
come to the correct place. Goody. It's not that hard, dude. No. Nick Goody. Jeez.
Hold on. Please hold. I'm going to find it.
Kluber would be a little bit boring. Carrasco, nah, I don't know. Carrasco might be fun because he seems to be excited about being an American. Be a lot
nice. Oh, Carrasco would be fun.
I could bring a copy of Roadside America. We could see all the crazy shit across America.
I changed my answer to Carrasco. He doesn't seem like he'd be too intense. He seems like he'd just be really fun and laid back.
I don't know if Clevenger's – maybe he's the kind of guy who's intense on the mound and then not off the mound.
Well, no, I don't mean like intense like in a mean, aggressive way. Just that he's like passionate about everything, I think.
Too into base. Hey, cool it, bud.
Why are you still wet?
Where's Cody Anderson when I need him?
So our next question – from here we go at Nick.
I have to recondition the leather. This is ridiculous.
From at Nick Yuskevich, he wants to know: we need more Mario sound effects at Indians games. Besides the coin when the Indians score a run, what music or sound effects should they add? The tunnel music during mound visits, Bowser roaring when Tozai steals a base since he uses him in Mario Kart. This is a fantastic question. My main one is to use Music Park from Mario Kart 8, like as you're rounding the bases. Because the way that track works is when you hit the keys on the piano, it plays the music. So if you're going slow, it'll play it slower. So like watching Carlos Santana around the bases, it's a slow piano. And then like Lindor is zooming around the bases. It's really fast. Bradley Zimmer would just be ripping that piano to shreds. That'd be fun, I think. That or a thwomp. You got to have a thwomp.
Well, yeah, that's about the only one I have. Yeah, you know.
I don't know which one of us is worse.
For this one because I didn't play a lot of Mario.
You're a loser. I mean, there's also Peach yelling "Take that," or Donkey Kong's screams would be good.
That's pretty good.
Donkey Kong's frantic screams could be used for so many things because that guy panics, man.
I got nothing for you, bud.
Anyway, the correct answer is to make it Music Park is what I'm getting at.
Nick Yuskevich.
There you go. You got his name right. Anyway, let's have a nice sweaty Cody Anderson there with us. Man, that's going to do it for our podcast this week.
Thank God. We've done it again. Heroes.
Anyway, Merritt, I'll talk to you next week.